You feel that? That's 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You're soaking in it.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to an edition, a new edition, but not the band new edition. It's the 2012 edition, the first 2012 edition, but not the band. Not that there's a band called 2012 new edition, but just new edition. But it's Technology Bites anyway.
I can't wait for 100 years so we have the 2112 episode.
I like this year because it's the first one that's really easy to say 2012 as opposed to 2012. Or it was always kind of, and I was never sure what you, how you said the other dates in the new millennium.
How do you say the whole decade? I mean, the decade. Is it the
teens?
It's not the teens because 10, 11, and 12 aren't teens.
The 20s, I guess.
The 2000s. All right. We're going to spend 2012 seconds blathering about the new year the show. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
sitting in the rickety chair.
That's Groovehouse, by the way. So welcome to the first episode of Technology Bites in 2012, the year we count down to the Mayan Armageddon.
Our special 2012, the year in preview.
We may, this may be the last year for Technology Bites.
Mm-hmm. No.
It could be the last year for everything.
Well.
Yeah. But I wasn't going to suggest that we were just going to pick up sticks and go away.
I don't buy into this into the world.
You're not buying it?
No. And besides, who cares when it happens, it happens.
A lot of people are resurrecting their Y2K bunkers. I think.
But see, that's not going to do any good.
No, if it's like the end of the world, then it's the...
Your bunker will just be a...
Your bunker's part of the
flooding
end.
In space. I was the
problem. If it's the end of the world, you're going to resurrect something. Resurrect Cthulhu.
Maybe that's what's going to cause the end of the world. All right. So, I hope everybody had a good New Year. I had a good New Year. It was nice and quiet. I didn't get killed by a drunk driver. That's a plus.
Or a stray bullet. Falling from the sky.
That's true. I should check my roof for damage. just in case.
Really? Did you hear gunshots?
Huh?
In your neighborhood? Did you hear?
I assumed that they were fireworks, but now that you mention it, it might have been the pop, pop, pop of gunfire.
Well, where I used to live.
That wasn't a hailstorm.
I've had to deal with that. Actually, I have a dent in my hood.
Really?
Caused by a falling bullet from New Year's Eve, yes.
This New Year's Eve?
No.
Oh, previous.
Several years ago, yeah.
Several years ago.
Mm-hmm. I even heard it. It was just a really loud ting.
A really loud ting.
Yeah, it was...
Who's shooting at me?
Did you find the...
He really hates the hood of my car.
He hates this car. It's an OptiGrab.
Life's tough on the hood.
That's right. Those were the days.
Just a little notice, the jokes don't get any better. It's still the same.
Neither do the movie references.
Well, we're glad you could tune in. Visit us online, geekradio.com. There's information up there about the Geek Gathering this Friday, the first Geek Gathering of 2012 will be this Friday.
Is it really the first Geek Gathering of 2012, or is it not until February? Because, you know, I messed that all up in the year 2000, and it wasn't actually the 21st century, and so I don't want to get this one wrong.
It actually is the first of 2012. Yes, I understand your pain. No, really, it's not the new year, not the new millennium. That was last year. You missed it. Yeah, no, we're not doing that. Everybody who comes to the Geek Gathering can say it's the first one of the new
year. I think it'll be a good Geek Gathering, too. I'm excited about it, yeah.
And you were expressing your excitement while you were also laying the plans to leave early.
Even earlier, except to be at work at 7:30 the next morning. So.
Ouch.
Well, maybe you won't want to run across the street and get your alcohol.
No, I will.
If you have to be to work at 7:30, maybe you just need to extend the Geek Gathering.
If you have not been to a Geek Gathering, the thing to keep in mind is that although Coffee Grounds is now dry in terms of alcohol... It is across the street from the Specs Liquor Warehouse.
The Mecca.
The Spec Mecca. So if you need it, there it is.
Whoop.
So if you haven't been, come to the Geek Gathering.
Yeah, come on to the Geek Gathering. Yes.
It's a new year, you know.
Same old geeks.
You didn't make it before. It's a good time to come and see what it's about.
Come and see all the geeks and feel better about not keeping your New Year's resolutions.
There may only be 11 more.
That's right.
Before the end of the world.
The end is nigh.
All right. So, visit us online, geekradio.com. Learn about the Geek Gathering. Make plans to attend the Geek Gathering. And you can also send us questions via the website. You can join us on IRC via the website. Everything's available to you right there. All the contact information. You can even listen online via the website. All right. So let's get this thing going, and we will do the Technology Bites InfoShot live from San Antonio.
It's the Technology Bites InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, so the new year, it's this isn't some maudlin BS. It's a time of new beginnings, and so there are things that are starting up or that are new trends, and there are things that, you know, the flip side of all the new things is that there are old things that have to go away. If for one thing to be up, another has to be down. And if you needed further proof that tablet popularity is skyrocketing, NPD Display Search has provided some new data that makes it even clearer. According to the research firm, 72.7 million tablets hit store shelves in 2011, which brought it over a quarter, just barely over a quarter of the entire mobile PC market. Assuming the fourth quarter estimates hold up, tablet shipments last year rose 256% compared to 2010. Meanwhile, in 2011, notebook shipment forecast went down slightly, they're forecasted. Still, it estimates that notebook shipments were up by about 12% compared to 2010. So it looks like, you know, one way of doing the math is the tablets may have impacted notebook shipments last year. Although most industry observers agree for now, tablets are not cannibalizing notebook sales. AdMob found last year that 77% of current tablet owners still use notebooks, but they do it less frequently, which, you know, the trend line means that if they keep using their tablet, it may be that they find at some point that they just don't use their laptop enough to replace it, or, you know, where they just stop using it, or the or else they don't get a new one because the few times they want to use a laptop, that's, you know, the old one is sufficient. Let's see, NPD Display Search is also bullish on Ultrabooks, the thin, lightweight notebook form factor, which some say could eat into tablet sales, could see shipments grow to about 175 million by 2017, they say. Here's the interesting thing, though. As many as 25% of all the tablets to be shipped this year will feature screens with 250 to 300 pixel per inch panels. To put that into perspective, the iPad 2 screen currently boasts 132 pixels per inch. So we're talking about some high res. You know, finally, displays might end up where they have, where they really end up with better resolution than almost than the printed page. That's pretty pretty astonishing. But like I said, you know, some things are up. Tablet sales were up. Well, obviously, operating systems have to that go on tablets go up, and the apps that people run on them go up. App downloads went nuts during the last week of 2011, peaking at 1.2 billion combined iOS and Android app downloads, according to mobile research firm Flurry Analytics. Moreover, it was the biggest week for app downloads in Android and iOS history. Mostly that was in the U.S., about 500 million or half a billion downloads, or about 40% of the total in the world. China was a distant second with only 99 million downloads. There was a record high for Android and iPhone activations on Christmas Day, with nearly 7 million new tablets and smartphones activated on that day alone. Flurry estimates that between December 25th through the end of the year, more than 20 million devices were activated across the globe. And now next week, of course, there'll be all kinds of new stuff getting announced with the Consumer Electronics Show. Microsoft will give a rundown on its Windows 8 tablet progress. Nokia will probably make some waves in the Windows Phone arena, and there will certainly be new Android-based devices. There's also an Apple, it sounds like a more print-oriented or media-oriented, not print, media-oriented event in January that won't be about, you know, before anybody gets cranked up, it won't be about iPods, it won't be about iPads. The best guess that I've seen is that it's going to be something with, like, the Apple, the e-book reader stuff that Apple and their programs with that. But so plenty of tech news coming as far as new stuff. But now the obits. some of these are just sort of sad, you know, when a company's been around for a long time and Kodak is getting its paperwork in order to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The Wall Street Journal has it, the bankruptcy protection is looking all the more likely in the coming weeks because Kodak tried to sell off its digital patents and got no takers. All the financing stuff with the bankruptcy pan out, its portfolio of 1,100 patents would then be relisted via a court-supervised bankruptcy auction. And to make matters worse, Kodak warned earlier in the week that it could be delisted from the New York Stock Exchange after the shares closed at under a buck for 30 straight trading days. So talk about, you know, basically, I guess, you know, Kodak was big in the 20th century, and now we're well into the 21st, and it doesn't look like Kodak is going to be seeing that they're I don't know that they're not going to be around for the Mayan apocalypse, apparently. And then some of them, though, you might be happy to hear about, you know, nobody likes to hear about the unfortunate demise of say another person, but I think that I'm pretty safe in saying that nobody will miss Internet Explorer 6 when it finally drops off the radar all the way. It's not really dead worldwide, but usage of IE6 in the United States has now officially dropped below 1% for the first time. So that's apparently good enough for Microsoft to do a bit of celebrating. It's now sending out shirts that have – it's a black shirt – and it's got like a, you know, the pulse kind of EEG thing or EKG or whichever one it is, where it shows the pulse and it flatlines. And at the end of the flatline, it says IE6. So that one, you know, I don't think, well, Microsoft, they made it, they own it, they're happy that it's gone. And frankly, every person who designs websites probably felt a certain sense of relief as this went pushed to the point where they didn't have to care about it anymore. Although I guess that happened for a lot of us a long time ago. And then in one that we announced a while back, you know, talked about it, and it was one of those where you kind of go, okay, well, what's the, you know, what's the, is this going to really work? And I think my thought when I reported on it was that probably, that hopefully prices would come down. Cisco announced the UMI, the UMI, UMI, about a little more than a year ago, and it was for using TVs for home video conferencing. The problem was it was like $600, and basically people didn't want to talk to each other from their living rooms in high definition. And, you know, Skype doesn't cost $600. It's free, and so there were a lot of other alternatives. So Cisco tried, and it chose to kill the product quietly. Unlike PR blowback it got when it flipped video camera last year. And, of course, UMI is not so popular that there will be a similar hue and cry this time around. So that's unfortunate. But, you know, we cover them when they're new, and sometimes if we hear about it when they go south, when they take that last when they go out behind the corral like old Yeller, then sometimes we'll try to notice. And then some things never go away. They just morph into something else. And this one I think is pretty cool. It's a product. It's also a new product, but it fit in with the whole new and old things theme. It's called Retrode, R-E-T-R-O-D-E. It's a USB adapter. Wow, that sounds good. No, for 16-bit Nintendo and Sega cartridges, so you can hook up this thing to your computer using a USB cable and pop cartridges into it and play them using any. Let's see, the features include two controller ports for each platform. Nintendo 16-bit and Sega, driverless operation with any emulator software, and plug-in expansion possibilities. Unfortunately, the cost is fairly similar to when you bought those platforms in the first place. Well, no, it probably is less than you paid in the first place, but still it's about $85, which ain't cheap, but is a nice way to have that cool little USB add-on on your desk. And now on to new stuff, you know, that starts the new stuff thing. This one's kind of cool from a new technology standpoint. The Samsung Galaxy M, the Galaxy M style, I'm sorry, some of these names, when you don't know where that name of the product ends, is kind of doesn't, I think that means you're doing it wrong. Anyways, the Galaxy M style is the lowest cost phone ever to have a Super AMOLED screen. AMOLED, it brings the 4-inch 400x800 organic screen to a smartphone. It's under $500 unlocked. It's got fairly high end construction for the category. It's 0.39 inches thick and looks similar to the more upscale Galaxy S2. It's got decent, you know, it's your basic decent Android performance on it. But the cool thing is the Super AMOLED screen. And on other Android news, while we're at it, Google is proud of its native theme and ice cream sandwich, dubbed Holo. It's intuitive, functional, and fairly cool. Now, in an effort to provide all users with a consistent interface, the company is making the theme essential for all Android 4.0 devices that come bundled with the Android market. That's right, the stock undiluted experience. Don't be alarmed, though, because manufacturer customizations aren't going anywhere, and the changes aren't terribly drastic. In fact, for users of Sense, TouchWiz, and the like, Google is issuing architectural mandates that will make it really simple for independent developers to create apps that fit nicely into these customized environments, complete with the proper widgets and colors. So now app designers may effortlessly choose between Holo or the manufacturer's default theme when they consider the software's interface. Although, you know, one thought, according to Engadget, and I think I agree, wouldn't you love to see this decision extended to end users where you could choose which interface it used? Meanwhile, it seems terribly unlikely that Google's new mandate will bring choice to the home screen, keyboard, and dialer as well, but, you know, it is a start, so maybe this will start bringing some rationality to the Android interface. And HP released a couple of desktops today, or announced a couple of desktops today, but the most interesting thing might not be the two computers, but the software installed on them. Now as the company releases new hardware, it's rolling out a revamped version of its Magic Canvas UI, formerly known as Touch Smart. Now it'll work even on PCs without touch screens, and it's going to ship on every HP Tower and all-in-one, including already announced models. The most significant improvement is that you can now access the Start menu and all your Windows apps, even when you're immersed in this UI that frankly looks more like a mobile operating system than Windows 7. You can uninstall it or choose not to launch it, so you're not, you know, yeah, it ships with it, but you're not forced to it. As for the mobile-inspired experience, it's widgets and large finger-friendly shortcuts, but also the fact that you get an unlimited number of home screens for pinning notes and leaving documents open. You can also right-click to bring up a search screen, and it looks like this could become ubiquitous on HP's desktops, but if you want to see it in action, now you can go to Engadget and look for it, and they do have a promo video showing it. So the cool thing, though, is when, you know, on a touch-type device where you can get that kind of phone experience, and I think it's very likely that more of the kind of touch experience is going to be getting into, especially these iMac-looking, you know, all-in-one type computers. They certainly seem like the first best candidate for that type of technology. And people are ready for touch. I think that's one of those things where the time has kind of come for it. There's been a lot of talk about it since before Technology Bytes ever was a radio show, but now it does seem like they've kind of got it knocked, where people get it and they are a lot closer to wanting it. And finally, this one, you know, one of the other things that happens with new stuff that we always, most of the time, really, really love on Technology Bytes when something gets a lot smaller. And Roku, the streaming kind of internet TV kind of product, they had reduced the size of their players to a mere hockey puck, but now they've managed to fit all the necessary hardware into a tiny dongle that plugs into the HDMI port off of compatible HD TVs. It's mobile high-definition link ports were intended for users to hook up their mobile phones simply for control and charging, but this also powers the unit, which packs Wi-Fi and all that into a tiny package and can even be controlled by the TV's remote. So HDTV manufacturers can build TVs that function as dumb displays without it, but become smart TVs featuring the Roku experience we've become accustomed to just by plugging one in. The other benefit is no more obsolete smart TV hardware when the updates stop flowing. Roku has a decent track record in this regard, and if you ever need a more powerful unit, it's a lot simpler to swap out a simple dongle to add features than changing out the entire TV set. First TVs that'll be compatible with this is Best Buy's Insignia branded line, which will be ready when the stick debuts in the second half of this year. It will work from TVs from other manufacturers like Samsung and Toshiba that meet the spec. But of course, they're not, you know, most of the places that are making smart TVs are not going to be handing, you know, sacrificing their existing smart TV platforms very quick. The price should be in the similar range to current Roku players. And the company announced it's shipped 2.5 million of those to date. So that's a new one. It's small. It kind of uses an HDMI. The thing I like about it is it uses an HDMI port almost like it's a USB port to just plug this thing in and have it work. And that's the news.
We are having a conversation about the pronunciation of R-O-K-U. How are you pronouncing that? Roku?
Roku?
I think it's Roku. I always said Roku.
Roku, if you can't pronounce a joke.
I'm looking at the Roku forums, and they're saying it's Roku. So,
okay, well, make sure and ask for it by name when you go.
Ask for it by all of its names.
I had a Roku and it died.
And then if
I loved it.
If anybody says I want to rock you, then always just say like a hurricane.
Okay.
Or stay tuned and we will rock you.
We will, Roku. Scream it now! 713-526-5738. We invite you to call and be a part of the first show of 2012. Who will be the first person to be on the air with us? We did have somebody call in to let us know that the end of the world is going to be a lot sooner than we think.
Weeks, not months.
Weeks, not months. Months, not years.
It's two different premises, though, right? He was just saying society, destruction as a whole, and we're saying Aztec gods. So,
I just want to, if it's going to happen, let's just get it over with. Let's just do it. Move on.
Well, Roku is the Japanese.
So how do you pronounce numbers. That would be the question.
That's if you go to translate.google.com, I think it'll speak it to you. I'm not positive on that, but maybe.
In French, I think it's Rochambeau.
Have you gotten that game for your Xbox yet, Jay?
Rochambeau.
No, I'm looking for the chat roulette app.
Leo.
They don't pronounce it anything like what you...
Well, one more time.
Leo.
That doesn't sound right.
No.
All right, 713-526-573. That's... Speaking of which, I did get an Xbox. Many of people here already know that that's the case. So now my media center empire has, I got a new couch. I got rid of the big coffee table. I've got a rolling ottoman.
Added a Blu-ray?
Got a Blu-ray.
Do you have a Roomba?
I do not have a Roomba. I think I would scare the crap out of my parrot.
That's what it's for.
You want to rent one? Because I've got
it. If I'm going to get permission to scare the crap out of my bird... It's going to be with one of those radio-controlled helicopters.
You've seen the video with the cat riding on the Roomba, and as the Roomba swings by the dog, the cat beats out and pops the dog on the nose.
No, I haven't
It's great.
Seen that.
It's great.
Makes me want to get a Roomba and a cat.
That's right.
No, so I got the Xbox. Looks great on the 55-inch flat-screen TV. Got the Kinect. One thing about the Kinect... is that when you're playing the Kinect games, I don't know if you've ever used a Kinect before, but you play the Kinect game, and I did not know this, but the Kinect has a camera in it.
Oh, yes.
And so while you're playing the games, it'll take snapshots of you while you're in your least flattering positions.
And little videos.
I haven't seen the videos yet, but I've got some pretty, oh my God.
When you do the field games have videos of you like running in place and so forth. It's pretty awesome.
It kind of kills the whole fantasy.
It does.
You allow yourself to be drawn into the game and have this experience, and you're concentrating on your avatar there.
And it mocks you.
And then it shows you your fat, ugly, balding self in real life. And not very, and blessedly unhigh resolution.
Yeah, and if you want to.
Whoa, it's another way of saying unhigh.
It will share those with the world.
Yeah.
See, Microsoft can make money by charging you points not to share those.
Yeah, right.
You know you're in trouble when your significant other walks through the room and goes, I didn't know they were televising the Special Olympics.
Oh. Thanks, Pete. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun, and between that and the Wii, I'm getting a lot more activity out of myself. So 2012 is the year of at least not sitting on my butt the whole evening, just at work, then most of the time in the evening, but just a couple of hours of not, after I play a little Halo.
So December 20th, flash forward, Jay says, you know what? I'm in the best shape of my life.
That would be awesome. And 21st, I'm dead because it's the end of the world. I'm in the best shape I've ever been.
But you died pretty.
That's like getting in shape to get hit by a bus. Exactly. Are you saying I'm pretty, Dwight?
Not yet.
Are you coming on to me?
Not yet.
Are you hitting on me? All right, 713-526-5738.
We had a caller want to know, where are those things stored? Where do they go after they're recorded?
Pictures,
yeah.
They're stored on the Xbox, but you can choose to share or not share with your There is a social media aspect to the Xbox.
Does it keep them indefinitely, like on a hard drive, or is it just in memory, and when you turn it off and turn it back on, the pictures are gone?
I think they're probably on the hard drive. I need to do a little bit more research. Are you going to hack my Xbox and get my pictures?
I think it's in the cloud.
And you have the Xbox to the right or the left of your TV?
Why don't you just look in the window and tell me? I honestly don't know. I actually need to get around to turning that whole thing off. Some of the games, actually, the little camera will pop up as you're playing, you know, as the action gets heated, a camera will appear, snap your picture.
Right when you're playing the computer, it'll do that and pop it up and show you yourself. And so you're, ah! And then the computer wins.
Well, you know, when I was tuning the Kinect and it says the Xbox can see you, and I was like, okay, Russ, remember to wear pants in the TV room. It'd be even better if the whole Kinect had a HAL.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Yeah. Like, comes with some pod bay doors.
So much for me dressing like the Red Hot Chili Peppers cover in my house for all of 2012.
It's not available anymore, but for a while there actually was a game show that you played across Xbox Live. And they used your avatar, but apparently if you allowed it, people could actually see you playing. And I think it was a little frightening. They don't offer that feature anymore.
Yikes. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we're going to have an hour and a half left of Technology Bites, and it's going to be mostly all about your phone calls. So if you have a question or comments, like to talk about technology in any way, shape, or form, this is the show to do it.
So we will let you know that we take snapshots of you during your call when you call 713-526-5738, since I stepped on Jay with that.
Ow! My segue. All right, Grewhouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up first, next?
First, next, on the first next show of 2012, we're going to take Jeff.
Jeff, you're on the air with Technology Bites. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, guys. My name is Jeff. I'm not computer illiterate, but I do have some problems, and I know you've answered this a million times. I don't get to listen to you too often. I bought three computers from Salvation Army, which came from schools. And I hooked the first one. I didn't know what I was going to do with them. They're Dell Dimension 2400s. And they're XP, Windows XP is whatever that is, that operating system?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, of course, I got on there and I started fooling around, and I got a virus or a Trojan or something on the first one. So I put that one down, booted up the second one. In 4 days, I got another one. Okay, so I have one left. So what I'm thinking is I must not have a firewall, and I don't really know how to go inside my computer and all that stuff. So I'm wondering what you would recommend that I should install.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have an antivirus program installed on these computers?
I never did, no.
Well, that's the first problem.
My advice is buy more computers.
Yeah, there are a dime a dozen at the Salvation Army, apparently.
Well, it's a penny and four. I don't know where that stands, but...
It stands way back there.
It's a pretty far piece back. Yeah. I hope you didn't pay a lot of money for it, but how long ago did you buy the computers?
A year ago, and the date on them is 09.
But you bought them a year ago, and you're just now getting around to hooking them up? Or?
Yeah, yes, uh-huh.
All right. Well, the good news is that if you're just now getting around to hooking them up, they're like brand new. It's not like you've been using them for a year. So did the Salvation Army provide you with some way to reinstall the software on these computers?
No, they had no information other than one of the guys that helps out there or works there or whatever. Yeah. He's the guy that got them from the school. I imagine he took everything off of them that the school had on them. I don't understand that stuff. And then must have had 30 of them for the public.
Right.
And well, one of my shape.
Well, yeah, well, you know, the good thing about used computers like that is that they can usually be had for relatively cheap. Mm-hmm. My biggest pet peeve is that people who don't know much about computers tend to be the people that go out and buy these things, and they end up struggling with their computer experience because they've bought something and they have no support. They have no means of reinstalling the software. Nothing.
And in the case of what you did, where you got it, where you essentially got it from a school, you know, it's very possible that the school took these old computers, used an old version of Windows XP to kind of wipe the drive, and presuming they got everything off of it. And so you're left with a machine that doesn't have all the latest patches and fixes. And if you didn't do that, those fixes help prevent viruses from getting on your computer. So if you didn't update it and you connected it to the internet and used it for a while, you were a sitting duck, basically.
So how are you connecting to the internet?
Comcast.
Are you connecting straight up with the modem and you're moving the modem from computer to computer, or do you have a router in place or what?
No, I didn't know. I wanted to learn about computers and learn how to link them and see if I could even make any sense of that, if there was any reason to do it.
Okay.
I bought these computers for $80 a piece.
All right. But so, the question really is still on the table. When you connect them to the internet, there's two ways that you can connect to the internet. There's one where you just connect straight up. You get a cable modem from Comcast or a DSL modem from AT&T, and you connect it straight to your computer. Your computer is connected, for all intents and purposes, directly to the internet. That's the least secure way to connect to the internet, because there are viruses and scans and all kinds of things that are looking for vulnerabilities in computers that are just open to the internet. Is that how you're connecting?
Yes.
Okay. The first thing you want to do is get a router. Any router will do to start. Just get a Linksys or a Netgear router and use that to connect to the internet and connect your computers to the router. That way you can have all three or four computers connected to the internet simultaneously, and you have a layer of protection.
Okay.
The next thing you need...
And that's how you network it. That's
right.
What you wanted to do. That will network it.
That will allow you to then play around with networking concepts where you're sharing drives between the computers and files and devices and so forth. The next thing you want to do is get antivirus software for all the computers.
Mm-hmm.
AVG is a good free one. There are a number of different ones out there. Get
What's
something.
The name?
AVG.
Is that you find
it's
that
three
on
letters.
The net?
Or? Yeah, you find it on the internet where all the viruses are.
Yeah, I get a virus putting that antivirus on.
But the problem that you're in is that because you've bought these used computers and you have no means of reinstalling the software, if the software gets all messed up and full of viruses, you don't have a way of getting back to square one.
Well, I think I do, actually.
You do?
Not me, but somebody I know, I think, can do it for me.
Okay. Because, you know, since you haven't done anything with these computers, you don't have a lot of personal files on there, you could conceivably reload the operating systems and the applications once you get a hold of that software to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not out anything. So you can recover from your virus problem. But you want to get a firewall, not a firewall, but you want to get a router, which will act as a firewall, and some antivirus software, lickety-split. So that's your mission. Get back with us the next time you have an opportunity to listen to the show and let us know that you've done that.
Okay. Would you tell me, though, if does it make sense to go to Micro Center and get, for instance, McAfee or Norton versus AVG? I mean,
the thing is, AVG is technically it's free for one computer per household, so you would be in license violation of AVG if you install it on more than one computer. That being said, I don't know that they enforce that. You could get AVG for one. You could get Kaspersky for another. There are a number of different. Just Google search. Get online. Google search. Be careful. Don't click on the virus links. Just click on the good links. Google search free antivirus software. AVG is one. KASPERSKY. Kaspersky is another. You'll find information about the different ones. You could load one on all three, or you could get a different one for each one. But if you got money, you know, if you're talking about saving money by buying Salvation Army computers for $80, why do you want to go out and spend $40 on a virus package, an antivirus package?
Rhino on IRC said that Comcast provides McAfee to its subscribers.
Oh, it does?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
That's right. Yeah, might call Comcast support. I had forgotten that they do that, but that's true.
Comcast.net has a subscriber thing, and if they give you an email address, if you log in, a lot of times they'll have all the software you can download for home use.
Mm. Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's...
Thanks,
that's
Rhino. Yeah, so I would, go to the Comcast website, log in with your account. If you need some help with that, call Comcast support. They offer McAfee for free, and you could load that on all three computers and be done with it.
Okay, I would like to ask just one simple question. When these things got infected with viruses, Windows, or I think it's Windows, I get these pop-ups, and they look like they're Windows, you know, like they're part of Microsoft.
Yeah, they look like system messages and alerts, but they're really viruses.
Oh, really?
They're trying to fool you.
Yes.
So what happens in the future once I get the, that things you're talking about?
If you get McAfee, McAfee's stuff looks very distinctive, and it will indicate that it's McAfee. What you want to look for, the things that often pop up are actually browser windows, and they'll look like small browser windows, complete with the three little, check boxes on the right side where you'd close it. And what you want to do if you see those, rather than click on anything to close it, is go down into the taskbar where you see the instance for that running, right-click on it, and close it from there. That means you won't click on anything and you won't get any viruses.
Okay.
Just be careful because your virus-infected computers will rise up and kill you in your sleep.
Unplug them at night is the best you can do.
And close the door. They're not good with doorknobs. So if you close the office door, the bedroom door, wherever they are, so they can't get you.
Okay. For eBay, StubHub, and Craigslist. Am I making a mistake by trying to use Outlook Express, or would you recommend that, or would you? Do you think
wait a minute. How are you getting from StubHub and eBay to Outlook Express? What do you mean?
I need a mailing address to use them, like Craigslist.
Yes. Right. Well, you can get a free email address. Comcast provides email addresses which you can access through their website, or using Outlook Express, or using any number of free email programs. You can also go to gmail.com and sign up for a free email address, which you just use from a website.
Mm-hmm.
You have tons of options. Sounds like you're going to have a new question every time we try to...
This was the last one. I just wondered if Outlook is troublesome. Before 5 years ago when I had computers up, it seemed like I was always having trouble.
It sounds like the whole of computing experience for you is trouble.
Yes, it is.
Outlook is a solid, standard email program. I use it at work all day long. Outlook Express, I know thousands of people use it. I mean, I get emails all the time from people that use Outlook Express. It's fine.
Okay.
The problems come from things like viruses, not maintaining your computer, and not having your software behave right. If you take care of your computer and you treat it right, and you run all the proper maintenance and you keep it safe, it'll work the way it's supposed to as long as the hardware doesn't fail.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, one of my pet peeves is people that go and buy salvage computers that I saved a bunch of money. I'm so smart. And then they don't know what to do, and then they call us and take advantage of our free
stuff. I spend just as much money on software. That's what gets me.
Yeah.
Remember us at pledge time.
Yeah.
Remember the guy that gave you the free tech support.
All right. Guru House.
First call of 2012.
That was the first call of 2012.
That was it.
Bargain first eight hunters. Questions of 2012.
He's probably going to go into the used computer business on eBay. Buying and selling.
With Outlook.
Pentium 4s with Outlook.
You wonder, Express. Is he using IE6?
No doubt. Probably is. All right, Grewhouse.
A whole can of worms, man.
Whole can of worms?
He's going to call back. It's not going to be good.
We got a listener for life. No, yeah. He's had those computers for a year.
He's just got to know which porn sites to visit.
I don't know what the problem is. I was surfing for porn, looking for wares, and all of a sudden I'm getting all these viruses. What's up? All right.
Visiting the wrong sites.
Although, I will say that plenty of legitimate sites seem to have some nasty payloads. All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
All right, up next, second call of 2012.
Second call.
Second call. Call number two. It's going to be
Carl. Number two.
Carl number two. Right.
Carl, you're on the air, Carl.
Hey. I got this iPhone from Salvation Army this year.
Is it an iPhone 3?
No, it's a new one. It's the latest.
And you really got it from Salvation Army, or you're just making a joke?
No, I'm just joking. I'm joking.
I would buy an iPhone from the Salvation Army. Yeah.
That stands for Salvation.
Yeah. All right, so what's going on with your iPhone?
Well, I'm kind of like a novice at it. And also, I was reading this past year where they're people are thinking that there's going to be more viruses and kind of, I guess, Trojans getting onto phones.
Yeah.
That they're actually less secure than computers. And just wondering what y'all are thinking about that and any suggestions.
Well, that's definitely not the case with the iPhone, where every app goes through an approval process at Apple. So they're screened for all that before you get on it. A lot of that discussion is aimed at the Android platform and those platforms where you can just kind of download apps from almost any location or a place that's not curated. With the iPhone, that's less of an issue because of the fact that every app gets checked.
Okay. I was concerned about a keylogger. They're suggesting that you don't even go to any bank or financial data on your phone.
Well, there are concerns that there could be, you know, as Dwight mentioned, this seems to be more prevalent in the non-iPhone or the non-iOS world, where people that are looking for free apps and free games and free things to load on their phones, as Dwight mentioned, in the App Store for the iPhone, all of the software goes through kind of an evaluation process before it can be published. So there's at least an assumption and probably a fairly accurate assumption that software that you get buy from Apple will have met, you know, certain criteria for being, you know, free of malicious code and free of malware and viruses and so forth. I don't think that's going to be necessarily 100%, but I would say it's pretty close to it.
Okay.
So the stuff that's out there that's malicious for phones, that's designed to collect information and so forth, are usually apps written by somebody who publishes them outside of the markets, either the Android market or the iPhone market. Now, if you jailbroke your iPhone, which would allow you to download apps from places other than the Apple Store, then you could be running into a problem.
Okay.
I don't even know. Is there an antivirus for the iPhone available?
There are a couple of them, but, you know, it's kind of pointless, I think, to mess with them.
I find, what do you want to bank? What kind of banking are you doing on your phone?
Well, I might, like, check balances, you know, and activity, and every once in a while I might have to pay a bill or stuff like that.
On the iPhone?
Yeah, you can do that, yeah. I have an app for my bank that lets me take a picture of a check and deposit the check just by taking a picture.
No, I have that for the Android.
Yeah, and I don't have that.
It failed the first
time
I used it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's because you don't have an iPhone.
An Android.
That's right. It said you don't have an iPhone.
Oh.
That's why it failed.
No, it's because the checks are printed funky on an inkjet printer.
It even deposited a check from my dear sainted mother, whose handwriting is not dear and sainted.
Well, you know, one of the things that I count on when it comes to banking, especially banking online, but really any kind of banking, because, you know, you're probably more likely to get your credit card or your debit card skimmed by a waiter or somebody on the wait staff
at a restaurant,
than you are to have your account hacked on your iPhone.
Okay.
You're really in more danger of that. So what I count on, and what's cool, especially with my bank that I've noticed, is that whenever I want to sign on to my bank account from my phone or from a new device, the bank throws up all this stuff, says, okay, well, we need to send you a verification code, and you need to authorize this new device. So even if somebody intercepted my username and my password and tried to log into my bank account, they would have to have access to my email or my cell phone to be able to get the authorization code to even be to allow them to log in. And even beyond that, there is other fraud protection on your bank account. So it's really tough for somebody to get into your account. Even if somebody skims your credit card, you can usually get that money back. You can contest charges made to your credit card. So I'm not as worried about my banking information on my phone being compromised by keyloggers and viruses. But that being said, I would be careful about where you get your apps from for your phone and what apps and what you're doing with your phone.
Okay.
And the other piece besides the keylogger thing is if you don't have your phone locked with a PIN, you know, in other words, where you just swipe your finger across there and the phone is open, wide open, then don't save the password. Don't let it remember the password for any app that you don't want somebody who finds your phone sitting on a table in a restaurant or steals it out of your pocket or whatever to be able to just get in by swiping their finger across and clicking on your banking app.
Is it very easy to hack into the phone?
Basically what I'm saying is either protect your phone with a PIN so that to open the phone you have to punch a PIN or don't save the passwords in. Usually they'll give you the option where it's like remember me, and so when you go to your bank app it's already got your username and password filled in. If you're going to not have a PIN, then don't put that info where it can just run.
So if you do password protect or PIN protect your phone, it's less likely that somebody's going to be able to get into it. What they're likely going to do with your phone is wipe the operating system and and refresh it so they can use it and sell it. So, but don't, like Pete said, don't, even if you're PIN protecting it, I wouldn't necessarily save my passwords on the phone.
I was thinking about getting a key pass. It's encrypted password vault.
Right. One password or key pass. Yeah, those are good. You should also put on your iPhone an app called Find My iPhone, which will allow you, if it is stolen or you lose it, you can find its location on a map.
Okay. I think I have enabled that.
If you all you have to do is enable it, and then you can actually go to iCloud.com, and you can see where your phone is.
Okay, I'll try it out.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, good luck, Carl. Okay. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I didn't want to say it while he was on the call and distract, but you can use Find My iPhone and watch the thief go and exchange your phone at an Apple store for a new phone. That happened over the weekend. Somebody stole someone's phone and went to the Apple store and exchanged it. Basically got a new phone in place of the stolen one.
Really?
Yeah, free and clean. So there was a little controversy with that idea that, anybody could just walk into an Apple store with your... Essentially, with stolen iPhones, that's one of those that's sort of a dirty little secret, is if you walk into an AT&T store with a stolen phone and say, my brother gave me this, and if you're willing to sign up for the, 2-year deal to run the phone...
They'll sign you up and
They'll sign you up and let you use that phone.
Wow, I did not know that.
Now, I haven't had mine stolen, but that basically, some people I know have had their phones stolen, and that's kind of apparently the common deal.
But they couldn't track them, the fact that it was stolen, now it's connected to a person with an account?
Well,
they had to have been able to do that.
Once they wipe it and set it up for their own, with their own SIM, then their own settings, then you don't have any access to it anymore.
But AT&T doesn't have a record of the phone that in other words, if I steal your phone, Pete, and I go to AT&T and I sign it up and get to use it on an account that I bought from AT&T, is there not a way of saying, here's my serial number or here's my some identifier that tells you that phone?
A hot list of the ESNs.
Apparently, at least in the past, they didn't bother to do that, because you would think that basically a smartphone would be unstealable from the standpoint of going to a carrier, that they could have a blacklist of stolen of the IDs. I mean, it's got to be a unique ID, but apparently, at least in the past, that was not the case. You couldn't just... you couldn't use that to be enough to prove that it was your phone and so on.
Interesting. All right.
Yes. Well, that's why we don't run major phone companies, right? Because we won't jack people like that.
Right. All right. Well, we got time to get another call, I think. So, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, third, fourth call of 2012. We're going to take Michael.
Michael.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm having a problem with a notebook wireless card, I think is what the problem is. And what I'm noticing is in my icon tray, I don't have the icon for the wireless connection is the first thing I noticed. And then I have Bluetooth on this. This is a Compact V3000. And I guess I'm trying to figure out whether or not the wireless card some way has been turned off.
Well, there's usually a set of hotkeys that will enable and disable the wireless on a laptop. So if you look at the top row of keys, do you have the laptop in front of you?
I do.
If you look at the top row of keys, your FN keys, if you look at your FN keys, you'll see that some of them have blue symbols on them. And one of them looks like a wireless or like an antenna. So it's like it's probably the F2 key.
Okay, it looks like a printer.
A printer?
Yeah.
This is the keyboard built into the laptop.
Yeah, I'm looking at the F keys, and F1 is a question mark. F2 looks like a printer. F3 is www.
This sounds like you're looking at a...
5 has a moon on it. 6 is a lock. 7 and 8 brighten and dim the screen. Then 9 is looks like a fast forward. 10 would be play button. 11 would be rewind. I'm not seeing what you're describing.
Okay, so I'm not positive on this one. I know that some laptops have like an actual on-off switch for the wireless on the side.
Okay, and it's in the on position, and the light is illuminated blue. Hmm. Now, when I look at the icon tray, it shows me that my Bluetooth is on.
Uh-huh.
But the something is amiss, because usually in this icon tray, I'll have a icon that shows two computers.
Yeah.
And that's
well, that would be your Ethernet connection, the two computers. The wireless computer is usually a computer with radiating bands coming out of it.
Okay, that's what I meant to describe.
Right. Now, if you're not seeing that, it's also possible that your wireless interface is disabled. So is this Windows XP or Windows 7 or what?
XP.
If you go to My Network Places, if you right-click on Network Neighborhood or My Network Places and select Properties, that brings up all your network interfaces.
Uh-huh.
Make sure your wireless is actually enabled.
Okay, now I'm at Network and Internet Connections, and I have it says pick a task. Which one would this be? It would be...
Help me remember XP. If you go to My Network Places and you right-click it and select Properties, that should bring up a list of your network interfaces.
Okay, hold on. Let me go to my desktop and go to My Computer. Is that right?
Yes. Well, no. If you go to the desktop, look for My Network Places.
Let me open up My Computer. And it has
no, do not. Do not. That's not what I'm telling you to do. We're running out of time. Go to your desktop.
Okay.
And look for an icon called Network Neighborhood or My Network Places.
That's actually Windows 98.
Yeah, Network Neighborhood is?
Yeah, so it's not going to be there, but he can get to it.
Listen, we got to take a break. If you want to hold on, we can talk to you after we take a short break, but we've got a break for some station business for
sure,
a few minutes. All right, we're going to put you on hold then. Go ahead and hit the hold button there. All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites here on this radio station. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes. I'm this guy that's on this show on a station.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
We're going to be right back after these messages.
Saturday, January 28th, the University of Houston downtown hosts the 5th annual Houston Environmental Education Summit from 8 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. This event is for anyone with an interest in the environment and education. Workshops include training and curriculum guides such as Project Wild, Project Learning Tree, Flying Wild, Project Wet, Growing Up Wild, and Access Nature. Workshops for middle and high school educators include training in the Texas Stream Team Water Quality Monitoring Program and curriculum by Houston Tomorrow, focused on current environmental issues such as growth, land use, transportation, and food. Also designing and maintaining schoolyard habitats, composting, and building rain barrels. Earn up to 6 continuing education credits. The 5th Annual Houston Environmental Education Summit, sponsored by the National Wildlife Federation, HISD, UHD, and the Environmental Educators Exchange. For more information, go to HoustonEESummit.org. This is KPFT, Houston.
You can feed your family in KPFT too. KPFT partners with local grocery stores in neighborhoods near you. When you purchase your groceries using KPFT cards, you make a donation to the station. While those nutritious foods help build strong bodies, you can also nourish KPFT with thought-provoking programming. For more information, visit kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 314. Now your food dollars can become pennies for our thoughts at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
And just like that, we're back.
Just like that. You know, sometimes there's not enough message, but you can definitely fill it up with outro music.
That's right.
Welcome back to Technology Bites. We're going to now do the Barrett Times segment, and then we're going to go back and see if we can solve Michael's network problem.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Baritone, Baritone, Baritone.
Yeah. That means it's time for
Baritone.
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. It's the first Barrett time of 2012, meaning that if I don't hit an annual event this time around, I may not get a second shot. So if you've got an event coming up or know of one that should be included in this last round of Barrett Times, email the deets to events@geekradio.com. If you're headed into the end of times with too much Apple gear, or even not enough of it, you can remedy your situation a couple of weekends at the Salvation Army. Semi-annual hog swap meet. Of course, that's hog is in Houston area Apple users group, not as in swine. You'll have to modify your standard hog calls to include sounds like iPad 3, Apple Store, and hey, up in the sky where the clouds are parting. Is that Steve Jobs? You can put all these new skills to practice on Saturday, January 21st at the Bel Air Civic Center from 9 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon. The public is welcome to stop by for free, but if you have more than an armful of gear you want to trade, you may want to register for a dealer table. You can get registration info as well as details and directions about the swap meet on the group's website, www.haaug.org. I think that KD5 is planning to cart a lot of kit to the swap meet, so you may want to track him down before the 21st. Your best bet at that will probably be this Friday night at the January 2012 installation of the Technology Bites Geek Gathering. The Geek Gathering is a place where you can bring out all the new toys and gadgets you've amassed over the holidays, or you can just come out to play with other people's tech, or you could glue on some Spock ears and grab your Vulcan loot to attend what Jay Lee's calling a hoedown for nerds. That graphic is pretty cool. The point is, you've got a lot of options. We're not after your presence, just your presence. Things get started a little after 7 in the evening at 2503 Bagby at McGowan. Parking shouldn't be a problem, but if you park on the street, make sure you check both ends of the block for parking signs, as it's not always clear what is and what isn't legal mid-block. Hit www.geekradio.com for details and directions. Are all of us in the studio going?
Yes.
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 Maybe.
Oh. So, yeah, we can't promise. Well, that's okay, because we can replace Groove House with a small box of wires and electronics. Yeah, that's right. If you received an or Peter, you know, take your pick. If you received an Arduino over the holidays but didn't get any gear to go with it, you'll want to be the first one to show me your new Arduino at the Geek Gathering so you can get a box full of parts with which to construct your own 8-bit Groove House. Of course, this doesn't apply to our own Arduino aficionados out there. We'll bring you some of our own physical computing gear in tandem with an army of Hexbug Nanos in order to start work on an intelligent hive. Coffee and tea are available on premises, and Specs downtown is just a block away for your beer and wine needs. We hope you see out at what is possibly the last January installment of the Geek Gathering. I guess that's G-12. That's it for kickstarting your countdown to the end, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right, and now we're going to go back to the call where Michael has been holding patiently as we load up all of our Windows paraphernalia to try to solve the problem. So, Michael.
Here, reboot.
Michael, you still there? We got that turned up?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. So, did you find the network area that we're talking about?
Yes, I do have that screen up. It's the, it says network task, and I have two icons, LAN or high speed internet. It's showing me the local area network connection, which is an Ethernet cable. I don't have that connected that way, so it has an X on it. Then it shows me a 1394 connection connected.
Okay, firewall. You probably have to add the interface, the wireless.
Well, it sounds to me like it's not seeing the wireless hardware.
Could that mean that it might be out?
It could mean that it's actually failed, or it could mean that you don't have drivers loaded for it. So now that we ought to go back to the desktop and find the My Computer icon and right-click that and select Properties.
Yes.
And then go to the Device Manager.
Yes.
And do you see anything in the list of devices that has like a
yellow
exclamation point or anything next to it?
No, they're all clean.
Do you see one for your wireless?
Let's see.
Or it may say just network.
I see network adapter.
Okay, what do you have under there?
Well, let me open it. I have a 1394 net adapter, and then I have a NVIDIA Force network controller.
Nope.
Okay, now it's no wireless adapter is being seen. So it's acting as if either the hardware has failed or it's turned off.
Okay, now, you know.
Although even if it was turned off, you'd see something in the device.
Should see something for it, yeah.
So it sounds like the hardware has failed.
Okay, let me just share one other thing with you that I have. You know, when you go through Internet Explorer and it says it cannot display the web page and you hit the diagnose connection problems.
Mm-hmm.
I did that, and then it ran a diagnostic. And when I'm looking at it, it's the network location detection. Now, there are some warnings on here. One of them says network adapter status not healthy.
Well, it's probably because it doesn't see any network.
Okay, or it may actually be able to make some connection, but doesn't, but can't do much more than that. I'd make a bet that you've got a damaged a network adapter.
Now, have you tried that switch, turning it off and on again? Have you rebooted the hardware? Have you like powered it off and turned it back on?
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times, and then that switch, I've turned it on and off. And normally, there's an icon that shows a looks like an antenna with radiating bands around it. And when I put my cursor over that, it tells me that the Bluetooth is status is on, but it doesn't show any, you know, wireless, the other information regarding the wireless status.
When was the last time you actually had the Wi-Fi icon there in the system tray?
Well, I'm going to say within the last week or so.
Did you? This sounds lame, but did you make any changes or update any software? Or take any? I don't know if XP is still taking updates.
Well, I haven't changed anything. I took this PC with me on vacation, and I logged into my parents' wireless network, and it worked fine. And then when I got back here to Houston, that's when the problem kind of started or seemed to start.
Did it come with a driver disk or any kind of system restore disk? I'm wondering if you put that back in there and just ran that application, if it would maybe pick up the hardware if it was still there, or if you tried to find new hardware. Just
well, it should show up in the device manager. It really should show up in the device manager. Even if it was a software issue, it should show up as an unknown device or something like that.
Okay.
Just really try scanning for new hardware again to see if maybe
that's what I'm thinking.
Lost it somehow, but it'll find it again.
Well, usually Windows will do that on a reboot. If you reboot the computer and it's like
it'll say
found new hardware or something like that, because it would be, you know, sometimes you can go into the device manager and delete the device, reboot it, and it'll show up. It'll say, hey, there's a new hardware here. So it's acting as if it's either defective or it's turned off. Now I'm kind of going back to this turned off thing because I've run into, I'm not familiar with this particular model laptop, but I've, like, for example, the Dell D630, it has a slider switch on the side.
Yes.
And every time somebody calls and says, I don't have any wireless on my Dell D630, I'll say, look on the right-hand side or the left-hand side, wherever that switch is, and flip that switch, and all of a sudden that icon will show up.
Okay.
Did you, I know you said you saw the switch, maybe the light was there. I would try rebooting, and when you do the reboot, make sure that is actually on. So when it reboots, hardware-wise, you have a wireless adapter there.
What's the model number again on this thing?
It's a V3000.
V as in Victor?
V as in Victor, 3000.
Oh, I was looking for V. That's why I wasn't having any luck.
Yeah, I thought D as well, so.
Let me ask you a question. Can that wireless be turned off in the BIOS?
Possibly.
Okay, because I was looking around in there, but I didn't see anything that...
If you don't see anything that relates to the wireless, then probably not. But how old is the computer?
Oh, it's about, I'm going to say about 6 years old.
Okay. Well, the good news is that if you had to, if it comes down to it, you can get a USB wireless device for not much money and use that as your wireless.
Okay, so I would just use one of my USB ports, and there's a wireless card or whatever you would call
USB.
It.
USB. Yeah, it's just a little key. It looks like a flash drive. You put it in there, and that would do you just fine.
Okay, because if the repairing the or replacing the internal wireless card, is that on the motherboard?
Yes.
Chances are, That's not something, I mean, it'd be cheaper just to go buy a new refurbished laptop than it would to have that fixed.
Do you have the HP wireless assistant installed on this thing?
Yeah, I do, but I can't get to the internet to pull it up. There is some customer care software on here that's loaded that has a couple of troubleshooting exercises that you can kind of go through. I guess I'm going to have to go to I don't even know.
I mean, try
to access this model and get information that way.
Well, this thing, the wireless on-off switch is on the left-hand side of the computer.
Well, on this model, it's in the front. I'm looking at it.
All right, on the left-hand side, you don't... Let's see, this is... it says, wireless device turned off or disabled. Power to the wireless network or Bluetooth device is controlled by a switch or button on most computers. It is possible to accidentally bump the button or turn off the wireless service. On most computers, there's an LED light that glows blue when the wireless device is turned on and enabled. It glows orange when off or disabled.
That's correct. And my light is illuminated blue right now. If I switch it off, which I'm doing, it goes orange. It's orange now, and then I can switch it back on, and it turns blue. And I'm showing that my Bluetooth is enabled and on, but it doesn't show. It looks like I should have something that says.
Well, now that but there is a piece of software that should be installed on the computer that's called the HP Wireless Assistant.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
So if you open the Wireless Assistant, there's an option in there to turn on and turn off the wireless.
Okay, let me try. Okay, let me see if I can try that. Wireless assistant. Okay, I'm at. This is a Total Care. Let me see. Does it say wireless assistant? Networking in the web. Let me just go in here and type in wireless assistant and see if that pulls it up.
Well, it's probably a program under. It's probably, according to the website I'm reading, it's actually called wireless assistant. So the. Right-click the wireless assistant, and it turns on and off the wireless. It sounds like maybe you just have it turned off from the assistant, but I don't know where to find the software.
Now, that wouldn't be in the control panel, would it?
It would probably be... It might be in the control panel, but more than likely it's going to be a program under the start menu.
Okay, let me try.
Well, listen, I'm giving you some things to go look around for, but it is possible the hardware's dead, but...
Okay, the
USB device.
So wireless assistant, and then see if there's a place to
turn it on or off in there.
Okay.
And see what you get. And you also might even try a system restore to go back to the state, you know, to a few days before you went on your vacation or your trip and see if that does anything.
Now, I've done that already.
All right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm going to try that wireless restore, and if that doesn't work, it sounds like perhaps that it's defective.
Maybe wireless assistant.
A fair statement.
Mm-hmm. It's possible. It sounds like it. I wouldn't be surprised. It's not uncommon.
Okay. Is there any way that can be tested and someone can say for certain that is?
You can pay somebody to do it, but for less than that, you can get the USB port, the USB wireless.
USB. Those USB keys are like $35.
I mean, if you happen to know somebody who's good with laptops and computers, that's willing to look at your PC for nothing. I mean, you can bring it to the Geek Gathering. I'll tell you.
Really?
Sure.
What is that?
Go to geekradio.com. It's this Friday.
Okay, great.
And if you want to bring the laptop by, we can have a look at it.
Well, okay, geekradio.com is what you said?
Yeah, that's our website.
Okay, and it'll tell me the location?
Yeah, it's at Coffee Grounds in Midtown.
Okay, I know where that is.
Yeah.
Okay, what time is that from?
So about 7:30 till 10.
Okay, good. I'll see you there.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Bye.
All right.
That was like a little advert for the gathering.
Yeah, wasn't he on hold during Barrett time? Didn't he hear that?
He was trying to
fix his wireless.
All right, so...
walk down memory lane with all the XP stuff?
Yeah.
It's been a little bit of time since I've...
Still, there's still about half of the Windows computers on the net, according to net applications, are still XP.
And how many of those are using IE6?
Too many. No, even one is too many.
All right. 713-526-5738. We got no calls in the queue. I found this great picture of this newscast, and I'm about to post it to my Facebook. It's a picture of a guy who's a witness, and it's a news story. It's a still picture of the TV screen, and the guy's name is Leroy Jenkins. So nice. So I wanted to call the caller Leroy Jenkins for some reason. I was about to call him Leroy. There he is. See Leroy Jenkins?
Whoa.
Yeah, he's kind of scary. 713-526-5738. All the lines are open tonight on Technology Bites.
Call us now or come to the Geek Gathering.
You know, if we can't solve your problem on the phone, we'll solve it at the Geek Gathering. I'm just waiting for somebody to bring a Beowulf cluster to the Geek Gathering and say, here, fix this. Or something. Flickner, are you okay? You always look like you're about to go to sleep. You look tired? Have you not been getting enough rest? No, he's just gesturing at me because he's in the same room where Groovehouse is now, fielding one of the phone calls, which will be brought to the air here shortly on Technology Bites. What are you smiling at, Dwight?
Nothing at all.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Smiling about thinking about going to Specs on Friday and coming back to the coffee grounds?
I'm looking forward to the Geek Gathering. I am looking forward to the Geek Gathering this week.
I'd forgotten that it was Friday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did you make other plans?
No, not really. I was going to drink wine and hang out at the house and play Xbox.
Well, you can bring your Xbox.
Bring your Xbox. They don't still have those TVs mounted on the wall, though, do they?
I don't think they do. That would have been pretty cool.
No, yeah, you could have brought your Xbox.
Bring your 55-inch flat screen.
There you go. Now you're talking.
Yeah. Why would I do this?
Look! So you can keep playing.
I could just stay
home.
So
you don't have to wait.
I could just stay home. Or go to a concert. All right, so Groovehouse is about to put the last call on hold there, and he's putting on his headphones.
He's good to go.
He just gestured in a metal rock and roll kind of way. He gave the two fingers. Yeah,
the devil horns.
The devil horns, is that? Yeah, rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
All right.
We're ready to go.
Who's up?
We got some TV questions. We're going to start with Wayne.
Wayne, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
I got a Panasonic G25. It has an SD card on the side or a slot port.
Yeah.
And my nephew plays drums. I just sent him all my drum equipment, and I'm wondering if he can recommend a video camera that I can send my sister to record this stuff, and then I could just get the... She could, I believe, just send back the SD card, and I plug it into the TV, and it'll...
Maybe. Well, I don't know if the SD... You know, if the... TV will just play, you know, like, for example, I have a camera that shoots video and it'll record it to an SD card, but I don't think you can just plug that SD card into a SD card reader and play the video.
It depends on the format of the camera.
The video.
And what the TV support.
And the TV support.
I would imagine if you did it in MPEG, or it would work.
Because I've got a Samsung that can play several formats straight off USB stick.
Yeah, I would check
audio and video.
Check the instruction manual for the TV and see what it supports via that SD card, and then you could go from there.
Okay.
Bring the TV to the Geek Gathering Friday. We'll see how it does.
You know, I was thinking about bringing my telephone there. It was the one that was used in the Maltese Falcon. That's about as modern as I am. One of those candlestick telephones.
You know, but
those are cool.
But and it still works.
The thing about video is, you know, rather, I guess it'd be okay to watch it on the TV. Now, is it your TV is a smart TV?
It's a Panasonic G25 plasma, about a year old.
Because, like, my TV, for example, has a YouTube app on it. So if somebody wanted, you know, any video that's uploaded to YouTube, I can go take my TV and go to it and look at it. So if you're talking about having somebody film, because you want to watch videos of your nephew drumming?
Yeah, just the gigs. He's like 15. I've sent him my drum kit. He's already been on MTV a couple times.
Really?
Okay, kind of impressive. So
just TiVo MTV.
They live in Washington. I can't travel because of health problems.
Ah, I
was
see.
Hoping they could just I could just do the SD card back and forth.
They're not terribly cheap, the SD cards that are suitable for recording video, so you're talking about a little bit of an investment in money to do that. I'm wondering if it might be more reasonable to, say, get them like a Flip Vino, or getting one of those, you know, they're discontinued,
yeah,
but a Flip video camera that you could send them the camera, and they could video it and upload them to YouTube, and you could see them, or they could just send you the camera back, and then you could watch it on your computer.
Easy, it's easier just to post it to YouTube.
What
do you got,
Barrett? Although maybe not.
Not that we're kind of going in a different direction now, but his TV only supports AVCHD videos.
Whoa.
Do you know what that is?
No.
Whoa.
What is that?
JPEG images and AVCHD videos.
I think AVCHD is like the native format for DVDs and... I think.
Or maybe for Panasonic cameras.
Yeah.
It may be locked down.
You're very limited.
Should I just get a Panasonic camcorder and it would...
Not necessarily.
It might.
Does he have a fast connection?
No, AVCHD is a proprietary... It's a format that does not just play when you just like double click it and play it. For example, my new A77 Sony camera shoots AVCHD video. But I can't just plug my camera into my computer and find the file and double click it and play it. Like, I have to import it into iMovie. iMovie has to look at that file, and there's apparently some other files that go with it. It has to be imported. But if your TV will play those off the SD card, that might be a good sign.
If you find a video camera that records to SD in that format.
Which I would imagine that many of the new ones probably do, but you would want to look, like Barrett mentioned, that he found that your TV, that it supports that. So you'd have to find a camera that does that.
Okay.
So when you're looking for a video camera, and it may be that they all, you know, let me see if I can find models that say they do that.
Do you have an internet connection, a fast internet connection?
I have no internet connection.
Okay.
I watch Charlie Rose and PBS about 5-8 hours a week, and that's it for the TV use.
That's a good choice.
So you don't really have internet available to you if you wanted to watch somebody. So
well,
it's like,
I can
okay.
Watch it at work. I have internet at work. I just don't have it at home.
Right. The Panasonic HDC SD5 AVCHD camera will do it. Let's see. Sony. A lot of cameras support that video format. So it sounds like you could find a camera that would do it.
And then the SD card would just work and ship that back and forth?
Possibly. Well, here's what I would do is I would go get the camera from a store that has a good return policy.
Like Best Buy.
Right. And so you go and film yourself a little bit, you know, film a video, take the card out of the camera, stick it in your TV and see what happens.
Okay.
And then if it works, then great. Then take that camera and ship it off to, your nephew's house and tell them to videotape away and to send you an SD card. And it could be like your own little Netflix. So every time you get an SD card in the mail from your family, you send them a new blank one.
Nice. Oh, they can erase that and reuse it, can't they?
Yes, yes.
Sure.
Yes, they can. Yeah. Yes, they can.
But you may want to archive these.
Yeah, that is a good idea. There's only one performance of me playing, and I played for 15 years.
Right, so these are precious memories. But, if nothing else, I would say, you know, if they have any tech savvy at all, they should consider, you know, if they're getting good videos, if they're getting some good archival stuff, they can either save it to their computer or they can upload it to YouTube so you have them.
You can burn it to a disc.
Burn it to a disc or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's a good idea. I know he doesn't like to be recorded, even though MTV is probably a big recording thing, but
artists say they don't want to be recorded, but they don't actually stop you.
Yeah, so
they've noticed, right, stop, and they keep playing. It's like if they didn't really do what they just stop being entertaining.
Great advice as always.
All right, well, thanks for your call and good luck.
Take care.
All right, bye. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out all that video format stuff because. Actually, I can take my the camera that I have, the DSLR that I have that shoots video. They make them in two versions. There's the PAL version and the NTSC versions because it can be plugged directly into the TV to play the video. So I'll have to play with some of that. But it is cool that my TV has the YouTube app on it, so you like to go and find a nice YouTube video that's in HD and watch it on your HD.
It's really in HD.
It's really in HD. Yeah. It's quite awesome. Like that time-lapse one for the International Space Station where they're flying around, that looks great. I hate the soundtrack to that. Somebody needs to do a better soundtrack for that thing, but it looks great. All right, Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to take Gene.
Mean Gene Green, the dancing machine.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Listen, what I was trying to do is, I don't watch a lot of TV, but I wanted to get a set of digital rabbit ears and catch the local stations.
Yeah.
And I don't have, the only monitor that I have is on my laptop. It's like an Asus 17-inch thing, and I don't see a way to connect the digital rabbit ears has like a coax cable connector thing on the end of it.
Right, because you don't have a TV tuner in your camera. I mean, in your computer.
Is that what I have to have?
You have to have some kind of a tuner that would allow for the signal either from a cable or from the rabbit ears to be translated into a signal that the computer could then display.
Right.
So this goes back to the even before the HD antennas, any computer that you wanted to be able to use as a television or watch cable on had to have a TV tuner card. Now, they make those for laptops.
Yeah, there's a number of review sites that have them. You're looking for an over-the-air HD TV tuner card, and most of them are USB from anywhere from, $40-$50.
Yeah, so basically you'd plug that into your computer and then plug the antenna into that. And it probably comes with software then would allow you to dial in the channel.
Yeah, most of those usually come with software.
Right.
Is it a black box thing that hooks on the outside, or would it have to be a...
They come in different form factors. I know Hopedge, I'm saying that right, they make a USB stick. Pinnacle Systems makes a USB stick. Diamond Media makes a little bitty box that kind of connects. It has some more inputs and outputs. Just look around and you'll find something that you want.
Right. Do they sell those at the electronics stores?
Google HD Antuna tuner card, and a lot will come up, and then you can actually go and search like Best Buy or Microsoft.
Amazon sells them. I don't know if it would be something you would find readily.
I've seen them in Micro Center
and Fry's probably.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Best Buy.
Less likely Best Buy.
But you may be but you're probably going to find a better price shopping for that online.
And you'll have a lot more choice. They'll probably only have one or two, not a full range.
Right. And again, you're only going to be limited to what is broadcasting through the air, right?
Presuming that you get one that is over the air, there are others that you can, other connection, other types that you can get that will connect a digital cable. But those are going to be more expensive.
But for that, you'd have to subscribe to a cable service,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
There's also, there's services like Hulu. You're kind of limited in what they carry, but you've got Hulu. You can always get like a next Netflix streaming account. There are different ways that you can kind of stay current with some TV shows just by streaming over your connection.
And now I was just trying to watch like the football games over the weekend, which are on the major network.
I missed most of this call, but I bought I bought one of those TV dongles with an antenna, and that thing is awesome. I get HD right on my TV so I can watch the football game.
So it's a TV dongle that you can put into your computer?
USB.
Yeah.
And then you hook up a little rabbit ears.
That's what he's talking about. That's what we're talking about.
They're awesome. I got one that's awesome.
How much was yours, ballpark?
Mine was like $50.
Yeah.
Where'd you get it?
I got mine at Radio Shack.
Radio Shack?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's called just HD Tuner?
Yeah. It's a little, I think it's by...
Is it Hopedge?
It might be Hopog or Hopedge.
Or Hoopity.
If you walk into Radio Shack and say you want a USB HD tuner for your computer, they'll know exactly what
you're doing. Don't pronounce it Rocky.
Here's the deal. Don't buy one of their like $30 or $40 antennas.
Cable. Antennas.
Yeah, because those are way better than the one it comes with. Because you can fine-tune it.
Yeah.
And, I pick up tons.
Say, don't buy the antenna.
Get the one that they sell.
So you're talking about like $30-$40 for the thing, and then another $30 for the antenna.
Yeah, but it's so cool. It's so worth it. I get HD TV on my computer, over the air. I watch sports.
Lots of Spanish stations.
Lots of Spanish stations.
Chinese.
Yeah, but it's really neat. It's a really neat thing. I watch TV on one computer and do stuff on the other computer.
All right. All right. Okay, cool.
Wow.
Well, that is the answer, and I appreciate y'all.
All right. Well, thanks for your call.
I see you.
Yeah,
before
I
bought that, I was considering like a small 7-inch or 12-inch TV that I could just put next to my computers. And then I found this one. It was on sale, and I picked it up, and I was very impressed with the quality of the picture. Along with it comes a link to a website that has local TV listings, and it's got all the HD channels for the Houston area, and you can just, you know, surf off of that. It's really neat.
The I bought for use with my HD TV one of those Radio Shack antennas. It looks kind of like a big triangle with rabbit ears sticking off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And is that the one you have?
I have very similar. Yeah,
yeah. And it has a knob that you turn ever slightly.
Yeah.
And if anybody's tried to get HD like in the middle of Houston over the air, you know that it's hit or miss, and sometimes you'll get the signal and sometimes you won't. But this really lets you fine-tune it in. It's a good antenna. I think mine was about $20.
I was going to say, there's also, when everything first went digital, some people, and it might have been on Lifehacker as well, but I don't remember, but there were some designs for you to make digital antennas by hand using some coat hangers and a couple of, like, 1x4s or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bi-direction. It's a directional antenna. But they said if you really wanted to like make a permanent one that you wouldn't have to move around ever at all, you just make a second one, rotate it 90 degrees, put it above that one, hook them together, and then put them up in the attic, and you basically got 360 reception for digital television. Mm-hmm. And they, if you have some metal coat hangers and some wire and a few screws, it's pretty easy to make. And I have a friend who actually made one of those, and he was pretty happy with it.
Hmm. All right. TV. You know, I think I've mentioned this before. I was digging around in my attic. I don't go up there very often. I use it for storage. But I have a big aerial antenna inside the attic.
Did you hook your HD TV to it?
No.
You should do that. Because then you'll be able to get the uncompressed over the air
and go to local antenna and try watching some sports
on that. Now, it'll blow your mind.
Can you do that with the old antennas?
Yes,
it's the same frequency.
Yep. Same thing.
Yeah,
they have a UHF. It's a UHF band basically, and so when you go to the when you use that, you connect up. You connect it up. It'll also feed the USB the UHF band to the HD TV, and it'll work just fine. Yeah, you should do it.
Hmm.
It's not going to hurt.
Not going to hurt, can't hurt. All right, 713-526-5738. We've got about 30 minutes left in the show. I can tell you how to hook your TV up to your antenna. You know, whatever you need. So, Groovehouse,
yes.
Who's up next?
All right, up next, we're going to take Dorian.
Dorian.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good.
What can we do for you?
Well, listen, I've got recently bought an external hard drive. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And basically, all of a sudden, I couldn't open it anymore. And in fact, what it tells me is that it needs to be formatted. And I have some very important things on there. I want to see if I can figure out why it's like that and then fix it so I can get to those again.
All right. So it's a hard drive you've been using to store files on, and now you plug it in, the system can't read the files on it, it tells you it needs to be formatted?
Right, and I've tried it on several computers, desktops, and things.
And it's an external drive.
Right.
All right. Yeah.
Here's just something just to try.
Okay.
You've already put it in several computers, that's probably like the first thing you should do, but try this. Put it in the freezer for a few hours and then try it.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Okay.
If sometimes what happens is this may fix a physical problem with the platters. It causes the drive essentially to kind of shrink a little bit, and it'll be able to move again.
Shrinkage.
But if you can do it, if it works.
In this case, it's good.
Yeah, yes. It was a 750 gig hard drive. Now it's a 250 gig hard drive. But I swear, it'll go back to 750. No,
if that should work, as fast as you can, copy the stuff off of it.
Another. But I didn't know Dwight was going to go to straight to the freeze on the hard drive solution. But
I love it.
There are times when a hard drive reports has failed or not working. You know, it like seizes up. Freezing it can allow you to recover data from it. What I was going to say, I'm thinking that this is probably less of a hard drive fail issue and maybe more of an enclosure fail issue. So what I've discovered with, what I've discovered with external hard drives is, you know, sometimes the enclosure, which contains the electronics, which connect the drive to the USB and then allow that to connect to your computer, those components will fail. So if you take the hard drive out of the enclosure that it's in and put it into a new enclosure, it might start reading it properly.
New enclosure costs about maybe $20.
And you don't even have to buy a new enclosure. You can just get one of those adapters that you can just plug the hard drive in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it works, and if you want to, then you can go get an enclosure or...
Right. You don't have to invest in an enclosure. You can just get an adapter. Because chances are if... Well, you know, it might be a good hard drive, and you may want to get a new enclosure for it to use it going down the road, but it's possible that you could salvage it that way. So those are the two things I would try.
Whichever method you use, if it starts working, copy that data immediately.
Right.
Don't wait.
Right.
Okay. So it sounds like a temporary, at least to get in there.
Maybe.
It might be. Now, if it's an enclosure issue, it's going to be a permanent thing because the drive is just fine. The enclosure's what's failed, and the drive will going forward will work normally until it has its own hardware failure. If there are two different layers of hardware in this situation. You've got the drive itself, and then you have the electronics that make the enclosure, which allow the drive to be connected as an external drive. You could conceivably take the drive out of the enclosure and just hook it up straight inside of your computer if it's a desktop where, you know, like another hard drive.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Good luck, Dorian. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bytes.
I was going to say that there have been people tried to research freezing hard drives and whether it helps or not, because some people say that that actually doesn't do anything, and other people swear by it and swear that it works. But the one thing is, if you are going to put it in the freezer, make sure you put it in a Ziploc bag or something.
Put it in a bag.
Because you don't want it to get the humidity from the freezer in it, because that definitely will mess it up.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Thank you.
That's a good point.
I was also going to say that Chuck on IRC said that he actually went through several HD antennas, spending like around $60 on different antennas, different types of antennas, and none of them worked as well outside the loop. And then he went to YouTube and followed the instructions to make one of those by hand, and it actually worked better than any of those.
Outside the loop?
Yeah, although he said it's kind of an unsightly device, but it worked better.
If you put it in the attic, you don't have to see it.
Okay. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
All right, up next, we're going to take Filistino.
Filistino, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, guys. I was going to tell you, back in the day, I used to freeze hard drives to get them back spinning again. And my method wasn't to put them in the freezer. We would take a can of compressed air and turn it upside down and spray it directly on the circuit board. That'll freeze the thing, and it'll keep them. It won't do the moisture thing. So
I
had it work a few times.
Huh. All right, good information.
Yeah. Well, my question is, I just bought an X220 laptop from Lenovo. It's a little 12-inch model. They're ultra portable, and the thing didn't have a webcam integrated by default. You had to order it, and then they'll add it on. So the slot where the integrated webcam would be is a little light, and it looks like you might be able to plug something in there. Do you guys know if that thing is serviceable? Can you get the manufacturers to ship you a kit for installing your own integrated webcam or replacing them? You know if that's done?
So basically they offer this as an add-on, but you have to ship the laptop to them and they install it?
Well, no. When you order it, you get to, you know, click a checkbox to say if you want it or not, and they'll charge you an extra $30 or whatever.
In other words, the space exists for it in the kit. So can you just get the camera and install it yourself?
I've never heard of that. I've never heard of them.
Well, though, in the order process, you click a checkbox,
right,
and then it
right.
just comes with it.
I've never,
I don't
except
know if it's serviceable though.
I've never heard of the manufacturer selling you. Oh yeah, we'll send you.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they would consider it serviceable, but that doesn't mean that
it's not
you couldn't do it.
Right.
What's the model number on the Lenovo?
It's the X220.
You probably can buy that part, but you're not going to get it from Lenovo.
Huh.
Yeah,
I might be able to Google it and maybe buy the part.
Call
and get a laptop technician to put it on.
Yeah, I would think you might get it from service companies or somebody.
How long have you had the laptop?
On Amazon or something.
How long have you had the computer?
For about 2 weeks now, and when I got it, I realized I hadn't ordered the thing.
Can you contact them? I'd call them and say if there's an option to either swap it out or, you know, send it back in and replace it with the one that has the camera. What'd you find, Barrett?
I found a kit
sounds like
for...
that's what I'm going to have to do, because the other thing is to buy a USB model, and I think that defeats the ultra portable.
Call them, see what they can do, but there are kits that look fairly easy to install on eBay for under $25. Buy it now, $22.99. We can say that.
The only thing is those are usually in the bezel above the screen.
Yeah, that's right.
If you mess that up, you run the chance of damaging the screen. I would call them first and say, "Look, I meant to do this. It's only been 2 weeks." They say, "No, you're stuck with it. You have this $25 option, but man, be really careful."
But even on a 2 week old computer, you might be able to just, you know, say, "Well, look, if you're not going to satisfy this, I'm just going to return it."
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're still,
yeah, that's right.
You should still be within your satisfaction process. I don't know what Dell or Lenovo's return policy is, but if you've only had it for 2 weeks, you could just say, you know what, just take it. But I bet you they would satisfy you.
Yeah,
on
flex
that.
Your consumer muscles. See what they do.
I figure they probably will. I'll give them a call and see what I can do. I guess I can live using my old laptop for another, couple weeks. I guess while they send me one with the thing integrated.
And then check out the kit if it doesn't. It looks like it's snap in. It's one piece that snaps in.
You know, I was looking at the thing with the magnifying glass. It looked like if I just had it, I could snap it in because I can see the little slots for it.
Yeah, it's two piece.
That's what I thought.
It's like a 5-pin push-in piece with the webcam, and then it's a cover that snaps in. So
yeah.
It's not too tough.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys give me some direction to go look into. I appreciate it.
Good luck, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
How's the show working out for you tonight, Dwight?
Excellent.
Yeah?
It's a good show.
Is it? Has the Dwight stamp of approval. It's going to energize you and put you in the proper frame of mind for being on Twit this week?
Absolutely.
Geek Gathering's going to do that.
Geek Gathering will do it, yeah. Working Saturday will probably do it, too.
I hope you're worn out when you go on to Twit.
And why would you hope that? We're going to suck all the best out of you.
Wait a minute.
Hey,
I'm looking forward to that.
Slurp. All right, who's up next, Greenhouse?
All right, up next, we're going to take Curtis.
Curtis, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Welcome.
My wife bought me the new iPhone with the Siri.
Okay.
And
she's jealous.
Well, it worked great for a while, and now it won't even answer me at all. It just goes in this loop about how right now it's not able to help me try back again later.
How long has it been doing that?
About 2 days now, solid. It did it sporadically when I first got it, but now it's just solid.
Have you taken it to the Apple Store and said, "Hey, look at this"?
I have not taken it there. I've called their, their support number.
Right. What do they say?
They say that it's in beta, and it's prone to do that, and it should come back at some point in time.
Yeah, I hear from more and more users of Siri about problems like you're having with it. It is in beta, but I suspect if you march into an Apple store and express righteous indignation, they'll swap that phone out for you, which may not be a bad thing to do.
Yeah, I might try that.
Because that doesn't sound like the typical Siri experience.
Usually it's right. Like when it goes down, it's their servers not being able to talk to it, and it doesn't do it for, and it does that for a couple of hours. Have you rebooted the phone?
I have.
Have you done what's called a hard reboot with an iPhone?
I have.
So you've done the two things that, yeah, well, I'd walk in there at an Apple store and tell them what's happening and tell them you'd like to swap the phone out, and they usually do it for you.
Oh, okay. One question I had, you talked about their server. When you use the Siri, does it connect to a server?
Yes.
You know, okay, it's not just on the phone.
Everything, almost everything, all of the voice recognition and the computation for it is all done on Apple's servers.
Okay.
People are complaining here and there about Siri being overloaded, and I bet a lot of people might have gotten new phones, you know, for the holidays.
Yeah.
They just
could
be stressed right now.
All right. Well, I've already got one woman that's ignoring me. I don't need another one.
Nice.
All right, guys. I appreciate the time.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All right. All right.
Yeah, I hear from a lot of... You know, one of the interesting rumors is that, and I think Pete has reported this, is that Apple, if it's doing a television, would use Siri for part of the interface, you know, to search for it. If that's going to happen, it sure better be better than it is now.
One of the rumors, we don't have calls waiting, right?
Just a couple.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the interesting rumors is, you know, There's always been the thing about Apple's not going to do a watch, and people have a lot of reasons why. But apparently there are rumors about Apple doing stuff with curved glass interface stuff that people wear on their wrists. And if you think about it, I got this, I don't remember whose article I was reading, but basically they said, you know, if you think about it, if you're going to have a TV and you're going to do voice commands, you don't want to be the farthest, quietest thing away from the TV. You know, obviously the speakers from the TV will fight with you for talking, you know, the orders to the TV, but if you have a watch on your wrist that could take your Siri commands, and if you tie all these devices, all your different devices together with, say, iCloud, then a watch type device could be pretty revolutionary, done the way Apple does stuff, you know.
Did you see that episode of 30 Rock where he came up with a voice activated TV? And they said, and then when somebody on the TV used the word like silent, TV muted itself. All right, funny stuff. Who's up next? Uh-oh, somebody's calling about Roku or Rocku.
Right, but that's not box. But that's
Boxy.
Not the
name. versus the Bozy box.
Yeah. Bozy box. Right.
Since we talked about it, let's take it. Ernesto.
Ernesto, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hey, I think the watch idea for the Siri is right up there with the calculator on the watch.
I've owned those. They were great.
Yeah, me too.
Casio.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay.
Calling Dick Tracy. TVs. Calling Dick Tracy.
I got three TVs. I have one has an Xbox on it. Another one has a PlayStation 3 on it or whatever. And I've got a third TV, and I've recently subscribed to Netflix, and I can't get Netflix on it. So I looked at the Roku box and actually went and got one. I haven't opened it yet. But a friend of mine told me about the Boxy box, and one thing that would be of interest to me is to be able to rip a DVD, even a Blu-ray DVD, on a home computer and play it through this box or through whatever.
I have a Boxy box. And
it's right next to his cherry.
And in his roomy room.
It's. I would actually rather have a Roku at the moment. One of the Boxy box is kind of cool, but the software I think still needs work. There's a lot of updates for it, and it doesn't always operate as smoothly as it could. The Netflix app on the Boxy box doesn't deliver as good a picture as the Roku Netflix app does.
Okay.
Given the choice between the two, I think the Roku does a better job. There are some things that the Boxy Box will do, like it will grab high resolution video off of your network. It also works with Apple's AirPlay, which is the lets you stream. Do you have an iPhone?
I do.
It lets you stream your music on your iPhone to the Boxy Box and then through your TV. And if your TV is connected up to your stereo system, you essentially can play your music through your from your phone onto your stereo system this way. It's
so the
great.
The answer is both.
Huh?
The answer is get both.
Yes. Well, you could get both.
You'd need a fourth TV.
Yeah. but I would, but given the choice of the two, and the fact that the Roku's a lot cheaper, I would choose the Roku over
what
the
you
box.
Need are to replace all your TVs with HDLNA devices, you know, TV enable TVs, and just buy out all HDLNA.
Yeah,
devices.
An HDL TV. Yeah, one of those for your TV would be the way to go.
Because then you can just have everything talking to everything, you know.
Really?
My TV has Netflix built in, but I'm realizing that you don't even need all that built-in app stuff. You just get a TV that's on the network, and then any device that's designed to stream video and audio and whatever will do it. I can run off my Mac. I can stream things right from my laptop to my television and watch movies doing that.
Straight from some network attached storage devices.
Yeah.
Actually can do DLNA. Like,
you know, I do have like a little Neo, like Yamaha Neo device on there, on this TV. This particular TV does not have a network attached or whatever, a network plug for it.
It's not internet enabled, the
correct.
TV itself.
But I have a network attached device on it. The Neo, whatever, the Yamaha device. Hmm. It's a receiver.
Okay. Not familiar with the device.
Neo HD YMC 700. But it doesn't do Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem.
It lets me access the computer. It lets me, you know, I can see my network attached devices.
I think the Xbox is a DLNA device, isn't it?
I think it should be, because it uses Windows Media. It has Windows Media Player component to it, but it's also, because of the nature of the box, it's connected, you know, at least connected directly to the TV, either through a component or my, you know, HDMI.
Yeah, so you should, you might
so it doesn't
be
have
able
to do any over the network stuff, but it has Netflix. You right. can get a Netflix app for the Xbox.
The one thing is your, are you doing this wirelessly?
No, it's all wired.
It's all wired?
I mean, I can do it wirelessly, but it's also wired.
It's also all wire, all Ethernet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good, because it's you get a much more reliable signal than particularly trying to stream Blu-ray quality stuff.
Well, can I stream stuff from? I have a network attached storage device. Can I stream stuff from that? Is there something that'll let me take home movies or whatever and stream them from?
Well, once you store it on the network attached storage device, if it comes with the media server, if it has the DLNA server on it, you can do that, and you may be able to put one on it. But,
DLNA.
Yeah.
Okay. Digital Living Network Alliance.
Yeah, DLNA, right.
DLNA.
Mm-hmm. DLNA.
Right. Roku does not support that.
Okay.
But the Boxy Box does.
Windows Media Player supports that.
Yeah, right. It does.
So if he wants to do it on the Xbox, he can do it on the
You
Xbox.
Can do it on a computer running with Windows Media.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's still not, I mean, a lot of people say that it's not quite as intuitive and easy to set up as it should be. But it's cool if you can get it working.
Right. I've seen it choke on a couple of devices. It may choke on, you know, I've tried to use it both with the Boxy Box just to stream music, and with my network, with my smart TV, which is on the network, and in both cases over wireless, it'll sometimes choke after a little bit. Like, it's like the cache of the buffer fills up and it chokes.
So for basic, like Netflix and stuff like that, you like the Roku...
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
This, I mean, it's relatively inexpensive.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah,
thank you, guys.
Roku's
y'all
pretty
great.
Cheap.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Appreciate it.
All right. All right. We have one more call in the queue.
Yep.
And we jumped that other person ahead of you because I just was fascinated by their subject. So really, we're sorry, Matt. But here you are,
Matt. You're on the air.
Hey,
Okay. Listen, I have a... thanks for taking my call anyway.
No problem.
I have a T-Mobile box at home for my phone usage. And I have, I got a fax machine and I called T-Mobile and they told me it's not compatible.
Fax machines require dial tone. And your T-Mobile is on the cellular network and it doesn't support, you know, using it for dial tone.
The T-Mobile box at home, I mean, I do get a dial tone.
What kind of box is it? What?
The T, it's called a T-Mobile box at home. But anyway, so I...
Well, you get, I mean, you kind of get dial tone, but it's not like a, it's not like a regular phone. Right. It's connected.
It's voice over IP.
It's voice over IP,
not
right?
Not a true dial
right,
tone.
Right,
okay. So, okay, so it's not cellular, it's IP phone. Okay, so now you can't...
Right, I can't run a fax machine because I called them. They said no.
Right.
But I was looking at the Magic Jack, and in there it says it is compatible. Do you guys know anything about that?
It's a voice over IP phone for sure. I'm seeing if it actually is fax compatible.
I have used a Magic Jack. I used it for a few years, and it I never tried it with a fax machine. It presents you with a dial tone. I don't recall, but if they're saying it does, it probably does. It actually has some circuitry in it that may allow a fax machine.
According to the website of Magic Jack, does not officially support faxing. The problem is that Magic Jack, like Vonage or Skype, relies on VoIP or voice over IP, a technology that's not really compatible with fax machines. Users have reported intermittent success. Magic Jack fax does suggest a couple of potential workarounds. Turning off error correction, blah, blah, blah. You can jack on it. Are you needing to send faxes or receive faxes?
Just send.
Now, you can do that using, there are online fax services.
Or you can email.
Or you can send it as an email.
And it will transfer it as a fax.
I have to have a scanner.
Yes.
Yeah, but if you scan it into a PDF or something and then send it as an attachment in an email to some services, they will convert it back and fax it from their own bank of fax machines.
Yeah, no, I mean, my problem is getting the paper into the computer.
Well, you can get a scanners are pretty cheap. They're like $30. You can get a flatbed scanner, or you can get the all-in-one printer scanner fax, but forget the fax part and use the scanner part and scan it into your computer and then send it.
Okay, so I can pick up a scanner for about $30.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can pick up a scanner for pretty like about that cheap. You can get an all-in-one printer for less than $100. It's an option for you. Or you get a phone line.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call, and appreciate you. All right. You've been listening to Technology Bites here, and we appreciate you being on our first show, being with us for our first show of 2012. We have a Geek Gathering this Friday. If you go to geekradio.com, you can check out the information about that. Come see us on Friday. Hang out with us. Take a walk across the street, looking both ways before you do so, and buy some specs wares, and come back over to the dry coffee grounds and drink it with us. There'll be Arduino hardwares and stuff there. If you're listening to Technology Bites on KPFT here in Houston, stick around for Vegan World Radio. If you're listening elsewhere, more great programming coming your way. Check your schedule, your local listings for details. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's Groovehouse.
In a squeaky chair.
January is Poverty in America Awareness Month. Join us as we recognize a vastly increasing problem and aim to rectify it. The Fourth Quarter of Change Unity Event one-year anniversary party for Toiletries for Families will be Thursday, January 19th, 2012 at 511 Main Street, Houston, Texas 77002. Join us for an evening of entertainment, encouragement, and education. We will feature local artists of paint, poetry, and music. Fill a quarter roll and bring it to 511 Main and contribute to change. For more information, call 713-396-2787. KPFT Houston.
widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.